Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Lisa Simeone. Viruses are some of the most fascinating organisms in the world. Resilient, changeable, sometimes benign, sometimes deadly, they are more ancient than man himself. They have evolved with us, using our bodies and those of animals as hosts. They need us, in fact, to live. Though thousands of viruses have been identified, we still don't understand everything about them. You might say they're crafty, glomming onto us silently, living within us for years and years, then suddenly, inexplicably, exploding, and causing all kinds of damage when they do. HPV is like that, human papillomavirus. It's the most common sexually transmitted infection there is. And it's an umbrella term. There are more than 100 different types of HPV. Though it has potentially serious consequences, most people who harbor it don't even know they have it. In today's Soundprint, produced by Jean Snediger, we learn about this mysterious microbe in a program called HPV, the Shy Virus.
Deep underground, in a top secret research lab, security has been breached. A deadly virus, capable of contaminating the entire world, has been released by Umbrella Corporation.
In popular culture, viruses are always deadly.
Oh my God.
We have to get out of this building. What was that? It's the brakes!
Viruses descend on us from outer space. They replicate and reprogram at alarming rates.
Now, an elite team has been sent in to stop it.
Then destroy the human race on a grand scale.
Resident Evil.
You're all going to die down here.
In real life, though, viruses act a bit differently. In a lab at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, Peter Angeletti is trying to understand human papillomaviruses and how they work. No SWAT teams, no extreme science. He uses ordinary equipment to make cells infected with the virus grow faster.
This looks like a mixer in a kitchen almost.
It actually really is kind of a mixer. The only difference is that it has a thermostat. And we use this as a model system to analyze HPV virus-like particles. So these are not actually infectious virus, but they are basically empty virus particles.
Human papillomaviruses are among 5,000 or so different viruses that scientists have identified so far.
A virus is basically a molecule that has DNA and protein associated with it, and that is infectious. In other words, that it can infect a host cell like a mammal or a plant or some other kind of organism.
The virus and the host, a balancing act in nature. In the world of science fiction, viruses are upsetting that balance and creating lethal havoc. Fortunately, that doesn't happen often.
Viruses often get a bad rap. I would say a small percentage of viruses are actually harmful. Most of them have evolved to live with their host and, in essence, don't really cause much harm to any organisms.
At first glance, human papillomaviruses, or HPV, are quite benign.
HPV is a small circular DNA virus that persistently infects people, and it can infect the skin or the layers in the oral tract or in the genital tract. Human papillomaviruses are among the most common viruses.
And they've been living with us for a very long time.
When we look back at evolutionary history, we can see evidence of papillomaviruses in reptiles, in early birds, and in mammals. And so we can see that this virus has been a part of evolutionary history for at least 250 million years.
Were they harmful to begin with, these papillomaviruses?
In general, viruses are usually most harmful when they first enter a species. Viruses like SARS virus or Ebola, these are viruses that are not normally found in the human population. When they enter the human population, they're destructive. Papilloma, on the other hand, has been with us for millions and millions of years and is quite well adapted.
Well adapted, yes, and relatively harmless. On the other hand, HPVs can turn deadly. It's somewhat of a mystery, says Angeletti, and a paradox.
HPVs are a paradox. they're a paradox because they can live with us as seemingly harmless visitors in our cells, and they're very well evolved in that fashion, but then also they on occasion can cause devastating cancer.
As the new millennium turned to the 21st century, 31-year-old Christine Bays, tall and slender with flaming red hair, left her job as a psychotherapist to pursue her dream of becoming a rock musician.
And I want to thank you for this new experience.
My story really starts with me being a woman, living my life, loving my life, singing songs as a musician with band, having big dreams. I went in for my PAP test like I did every year. It came back abnormal for the first time ever in my life.
The next week, Christine went back for a colposcopy, a procedure doctors use to get a closer look at the cervix. She was stunned by what the doctor said.
I'm sorry. You have invasive cervical cancer with extensive lymphatic invasion. You're going to need to have a hysterectomy immediately. The moment I was diagnosed with cervical cancer, I didn't even know where my cervix was. I turned to my doctor as he was talking about cells and changes and dysplasia, and I'm like, can you tell me where my cervix is? It's the connection between the uterus and the vagina. It's where the baby passes through. You know, and I was an educated, proactive young woman. I didn't know what the PAP test was testing for. You know, you just get the sheet covered and you're looking up and you're like, do what you got to do, take a deep breath. And so that's what I did every year. But I didn't understand that they were testing for changing cells that, you know, could possibly lead to cervical cancer. I had never heard of the human papillomavirus, and I had never heard the words HPV.
Christine Bays was about to embark on a crash course on the connection between the human papillomavirus and cancer. The first person to pursue that connection, almost relentlessly for 35 years, is Professor Harald Zurhausen, a virologist at the German Cancer Research Center in Heidelberg.
There was good reason to look into cervical cancer because already since the 19th century, 1842, the first report came out which demonstrated that cervical cancer has something to do with sexual contacts. So it was in a way likely to suspect that an infectious agent would be behind the story.
What that infectious agent was, no one was quite sure. In the 1920s, scientists thought it might be a venereal disease, but that proved to be untrue. In the late 1960s, scientists began to suspect it was the herpes virus, since many women with cervical cancer also had genital herpes.
We worked ourselves in between 1969 and 72 on trying to find herpes simplex type 2 DNA in cervical cancers and failed entirely. During this period of time, I became quite frustrated and we started to look for other potential candidates. I speculated that the virus found in genital warts may be also the agent causing cervical cancer. And since it was known that genital warts contained typical papillomavirus particles, it was not that far-fetched to assume that papillomaviruses might cause cervical cancers.
Scientists at the time, especially American scientists, dismissed Zurhausen's views. Yet, he persisted in his research on the link between HPV and cervical cancer. His team went through failure after failure until 1983, when they isolated two distinct types of HPV that cause cervical cancer. Nearly 10 years later, epidemiological studies confirmed that Zurhausen's view was correct, that indeed HPV is the agent that causes cervical cancer. Each year, about 12,000 American women are diagnosed with cervical cancer. For most, it's caught early enough. However, before the introduction of the Pap smear in the 1940s, it was the leading cause of cancer death in women in the United States. In the world, it still is.
Feel what I feel and tell me that I'm all right.
When Christine Bays first got a phone call from her doctor telling her that she had invasive cervical cancer, he also explained that PAP tests are not 100% accurate. if her previous tests had detected abnormal cells, she could have been treated before the cells became cancer. Christine, understandably, was bewildered and scared.
I can paint that moment like it's burned in my brain. I remember the sun coming in through the window, me being on the corner of the bed in like the fetal position and crying and looking at my husband going, I have cancer. Like disbelief and pure horror and sadness and like anger and confusion and, oh my God, I'm gonna die. And you know, like just these thoughts were all consuming. They say it only takes a moment for your life to change. That phone call was my moment. Close my eyes.
Close my eyes. Human papillomaviruses, or HPV, are actually a very large family of viruses. Hand and footwort viruses, those are human papillomaviruses. And then there's a whole specific group of genital human papillomaviruses.
I've come to the University of New Mexico Cancer Center, where scientist Cosette Wheeler has her laboratories. Of the more than 100 types of HPVs that have been identified so far, Wheeler and her team, and here's where science fiction meets reality, helped identify many of the types that cause cancer.
Right here, these machines actually are robots. We give our robots names. So this is Jerry and Tom. And Jerry and Tom purify hundreds of specimens for us per day. So Jerry and Tom are our DNA purification robots. The DNA then gets purified, and it will be amplified so that we can detect very small numbers of human papillomaviruses in the samples.
Wheeler's team is in the midst of a huge project where they're analyzing every pap smear sample in the state of New Mexico, thousands every month. Today, it's also possible to test for the presence of cancer-causing HPV DNA, as well as abnormal cells. They're finding out exactly how many potentially dangerous HPVs are in the population as a whole.
And this laboratory tests for 38 HPV types. So believe it or not, this gives you an example of the results. Each one of those bands is a different HPV infection in these samples. That woman had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different HPV types. HPVs are so common, multiple infections are also very common.
Once I was diagnosed and I went through the questioning going, why did this happen to me? How did this happen to me? That's when I first heard, oh, well, it's this virus, HPV. Pretty much everybody gets it. And I'm like, well, what do you mean pretty much everybody gets it? You're saying that I had a sexually transmitted disease? Because I'd been with my husband monogamously for 10 years. And I had to learn so much about the virus and understand that, you know, it is a virtually ubiquitous virus. 80% of all women will be exposed to it by the time they're 50. And for most people, it's a transient virus. It comes, it goes, and it doesn't necessarily wreak any havoc. But for some people, it can hang on, and it can cause cells to change and go through this whole metamorphosis that can, if not caught, eventually lead to cervical cancer. So the Pap test is in there measuring for those cell changes. I didn't know any of that until I was diagnosed.
It's a typically busy Monday morning at the Helen Diller Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of California, San Francisco.
In May, she had a positive HPV. So that will be the reason she was triaged to come to see us.
People who have abnormal cells on their cervix or anus are referred here for early treatment. HPV is the most common sexually transmitted infection in the United States. Even for those in monogamous relationships, if either person has had a prior sexual partner, both may have an HPV infection and not know it. Dr. Joel Pilevsky, an infectious disease doctor here, points out that for most people, the infections don't stay for long.
You get the virus within a maximum of 2 or 3 months. Your body does develop changes in the skin, in the genital region. Most of the time when we're healthy, our immune systems fight those off. and those changes disappear long before the man or woman is next set to see their doctor. The paradox is that the virus is so ubiquitous and yet affects in a very adverse way only a small percentage of the people it infects.
So for most of us, an HPV infection may come and go, and we never know. But exactly how does the virus move from one person to another?
Right now, we believe that the only type of cell that HPV infects is the skin cell. That means that the virus gets transmitted from skin to skin surface.
In the case of a common wart, you could pick up an HPV by shaking hands with someone. For cancer-causing HPV types, it's almost always through sexual activity.
The current thinking is that some form of disruption of the barrier that the skin normally presents is required to allow the virus to get down there to the skin layer from which the rest of the skin is constantly being regenerated. The virus is setting up what is functionally a kind of semi-permanent reservoir of infection.
Peter Angeletti pictures the virus then moving up the layers of our skin.
Think about the skin as kind of like a conveyor belt. Cells of the skin have a limited lifespan. They live for approximately 21 days, and they continue to divide and slough off. Well, what this virus does is it reprograms the cells to live forever, to not die. And what do we call that? We call that cancer.
What's that?
The corporation's keeping a few secrets down here, something you're not supposed to see.
But they have only 3 hours left before it begins infecting and mutating the whole human race.
An HPV infection moves rather more slowly. It won't take over the human race in a matter of hours. It acts in a far more stealthy way. Indeed, HPV can be present in a person's body for years and years with no apparent ill effects. The fact that HPVs can quietly operate under the radar of our immune system fascinates Peter Angeletti.
I think of it as very different from the average cold virus. We think about cold viruses like influenza. Influenza is a virus that's fast in and fast out. It comes in, replicates like crazy, causes disease, and then leaves. HPV is quite the opposite of that. It hides out in the cells that it infects, and it can remain in a state that it cannot be detected by the immune system. And I think that is very clever.
Researchers like Peter Angeletti are trying to understand how the virus begins this journey.
Okay, Peter, we're looking at your computer here. Are these pictures of HPV?
These are virus particles of human papillomavirus 16.
They do have a shape, a spherical shape, a bit like a soccer ball.
Right. These ones with the bumps on the outside are.
And how does this soccer ball virus get inside the cell in the first place?
Papilloma, like a lot of viruses, gains entry into the cell almost like unlocking a door. The way this works is that the virus binds to the cell surface, and its attachment to the cell surface basically unlocks a mechanism where the virus can get in through the cell membrane. It then is transported to the nucleus where the viral DNA begins to replicate. And part of this process is essentially taking over the cell. The virus makes the cell into a virus factory where it can replicate its DNA and then generate progeny virus. The way I think about it is almost like you have bubbles that are making sort of a bloop sound, and they're separating and continuing to divide and separate. HPV can replicate at levels which are very close to cellular replication levels. And again, if the level of the virus is low, it can hide from the immune system.
Cosette Wheeler's team has followed several hundred thousand people.
These freezers hold biological specimens. We have purified DNA that remains archived for future testing or validation.
So what helps HPV evade the immune system? First is time. giving the virus enough time to work without being checked.
About 60% of people who get invasive cervical cancer did not get screened with the Pap test in the last 5 years. Even in well-insured populations, the women who get cervical cancer didn't go to the doctor to get a Pap test.
Second is sex with multiple partners. And third, smoking.
Smoking has cancer-causing byproducts, and those byproducts can be detected with a sample taken from a smoker at the cervix, right in the mucus. So when you're smoking and you have an HPV infection that is causing an abnormality, you are delivering cancer-causing chemicals to your cervix, and you are depressing your immune system, which you need to get rid of viruses.
And it doesn't just happen to women. Men are at risk as well. HPV-related cancers in the mouth and throat, often spread by oral sex, are on the rise in both men and women, gay and straight. Anal cancer, also caused by HPV, is rising in men and women, especially in those with depressed immune systems due to smoking, transplants, HIV, or AIDS.
Since we're going to go take your vitals here in the hallway.
Joel Pilevsky.
Because of the biological similarity between anal cancer and cervical cancer and the structure of the transition zone, we've adapted all of the techniques for the anal canal. So we do anal cytology. We affectionately call them tush paps, where we put a swab in and sample the anal canal blindly. It's such an easy technique, in fact, that we've trained our patients to do it on themselves.
I thought I had an infection. They told me I had an abscess. They were going to drain it.
One of Pilevsky's patients, Richard Goldman, was HIV positive and had never had a tush pap when he went to the doctor with a sore rear end.
So I went in the hospital for what was going to be a quick overnight stay. And when I woke up after the surgery, I had a huge incision. And the doctor came in and told me that he had found a tumor. It was cancer. I had heard of HPV, and I knew that HPV caused venereal warts in men and in women, but that's as far as I knew. I went into shock, basically, and was scared out of my wits. The doctors pretty much said, get your affairs in order. We don't expect you to survive the treatment or the cancer, but we have to do it. I just gripped my teeth and went through it. So this is the hardest part to talk about. The radiation was probably the worst part for me. I suffered severe burns on the outside and the inside of my body from the radiation. Extremely painful, debilitating, and I was bedbound and homebound for months and months and months afterwards.
Things were just as bad for Christine Bays.
Spinning in circles, trying to hold on.
The treatment for cervical cancer is pretty brutal. I mean, I was diagnosed, and 10 days later, I had a radical hysterectomy. That included the removal of the top third of my vagina, my cervix, my uterus, my fallopian tubes, the connective tissue, and all the pelvic lymph nodes in my pelvic area.
All this followed by chemotherapy, plus external and internal radiation.
It's gonna be okay.
I'm one of the lucky ones because I didn't lose my life to this disease. But the reality is, you know, I will never have a child. I have side effects from my treatment that affect me today and will affect me the rest of my life.
This ubiquitous virus doesn't hurt most of us, but for those it does, it can be devastating. Today, better screening techniques in the West mean that men and women at risk of HPV-related cancers are less likely to develop the disease.
The really good news is that if people are responding to the usual recommendations for routine care, their chances of having something very bad are very small. That's particularly true now that we've entered the vaccine era. The vaccine will prevent infection amongst women who've never been exposed to these viruses, so ideally before they initiate sexual activity, and will prevent almost all infections with the worst players with HPV.
The first vaccines, Gardasil and Cervarix, protect against the worst types of HPV, 16 and 18.
I hope that the vaccines in the future will cover more virus types than they presently do. Secondly, I hope that vaccines will be developed which can be used as a nasal spray without injections in developing countries and which should be relatively heat stable.
These vaccines, which have the potential to eradicate a major world cancer, started with one persistent scientist in Germany, who for decades bucked conventional wisdom about the cause of cervical cancer. For his discovery of the role of the human papillomavirus in cervical cancer, Harald Sarrhausen won the 2008 Nobel Prize for Medicine. He is an inspiration to HPV virologists, including Peter Angeletti.
In the HPV field, we think of Harald Sarrhausen as the grandfather of HPV studies. And I recall a lecture in which he made an interesting comment. Persistent viruses require persistent virologists. I love that.
Professor Sarrhausen, why did you remain so persistent for so long in pursuing the link between HPV and cancer?
It's probably my genes. I'm originating from an area in Germany where persons are supposed to be very stubborn. So maybe that's the reason.
It's gonna be all right. It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be all right. It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be all right.
HPV, the shy virus, was produced by Gene Snediger with assistant producer Sarah McCammon. The show was mixed by Jared Weisbrot. Special thanks to Carl Zimmer, Al Klingelhutz, and Barbara Culleton for science editing and review. This program airs as part of the series World of Viruses, produced with support from the National Center for Research Resources in collaboration with WNET, the Nebraska Center for Virology, and the University of Nebraska. You can listen to this program again on our website, soundprint.org. We've got a huge archive of past episodes there, as well as links to books, additional information, and related programs. The address again is soundprint.org. On the next Soundprint, divorce isn't just between a husband and wife or their children. It affects relatives, friends, colleagues, and pets. Who's got the dog? Next time on Soundprint. You can own your favorite Soundprint episodes on CD. Give us a call at 1-888-38-TAPES and we'll send it right out. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU and American University. Let us know what you thought about today's show. Your comments help keep us on track. The best way to get in touch is by email. The address is talkback@soundprint.org and be sure to mention your local station. Soundprint is production assistant Nkechi Mogekwu and audio engineer Jared Weisbrot. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Lisa Simeone.